Welcome to Nice News. This is a broadcast about some unusual topics. I'm Joyce Vesper, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. On Nice News, we cover topics from all over the world on many different subjects. The program provides a time out from the daily news that doesn't always cover the happiest of information. So please, give us a listen. Who knows what might give you a smile or make you laugh or even pique your interest, such as this article. Astronauts successfully mine meteorites in space station and yield precious metals in the breakthrough. NASA astronaut Michael Hopkins has recently embarked on an exciting journey aboard the International Space Station, known as ISS, and he's exploring the wonders of space resource utilization. His work, which involves extracting precious metals from meteorite samples, showcases the incredible potential of microbe mining in the vastness of space. Just last week, we celebrated the innovative research in Austria, where scientists are investigating the remarkable abilities of fungi to extract valuable metals from electronic waste. Continuing upon this theme of sustainability and resourcefulness, Hopkins has taken it a step further by conducting experiments that focus on microbe meteorite mining. This research aims to uncover the treasure embedded in chondrite meteorites, which hold promise for a variety of valuable minerals. The fascinating process behind this mining is rooted in the cosmos itself, where all elements are born in the heart of stars and scattered across planets during celestial events. With humanity venturing further into space, the quest to harvest materials from meteorites and lunar dust becomes increasingly relevant, potentially offering a more economical alternative to transporting resources from Earth. Collaborating with researchers from Cornell and Edinburgh University, Hopkins and his team have shared their findings in a recent publication. The experiment utilized both bacteria and fungi to successfully extract platinum and palladium, two metals vital for the advancement of space technology, from asteroids. These microorganisms produce carboxylic acid that bonds with minerals, allowing them to be easily released when placed in liquid solution. Remarkably, the microgravity environment aboard the ISS enhanced the capabilities of the fungus Penicillium simplicium, allowing for more effective extraction of these precious metals compared to similar experiments that have been conducted on Earth. As Rosa Santomartina, a professor at Cornell and lead author of the study, noted, the extraction rate changes a lot depending on the metal that you are considering, and also depending on the microbe and the gravity condition. This highlights the unique advantages of space for scientific exploration and innovation. While non-biological leaching methods were less effective in microgravity, the success of bio-leaching opens up new adventures and avenues for resource extraction in space. The future of asteroid mining is bright when compared, like TransAustra paving the way for innovative technologies that aim to capture valuable elements from celestial bodies. Their strategies include using sunlight to melt and recover materials from asteroids and developing systems to collect micrometeorites or space debris for processing. The remarkable research not only showcases the potential for sustainable practices in space exploration, but also emphasizes the importance of collaboration and innovation in tackling such challenges. We look forward to witnessing how these pioneering efforts will shape the future of resource utilization beyond our planet Earth. This article, Astronauts Successfully Mine Meteorites in Space Station and Yield Precious Metals in Breakthrough. Our next article, Blind Man Wearing Smart Glasses Runs Marathon with Support from Hundreds of Virtual Helpers. In a wonderful celebration of determination and technology, Clark Reynolds participated in the Brighton Marathon, joining over 14,000 enthusiastic runners. More than just completing the challenging 26.2-mile course, Clark made history by becoming the first blind individual to run a full marathon with the innovative assistance of volunteers guiding him through smart glasses. Clark, a resident of Portsmouth, wore specifically designed Ray-Ban Meta Wayfarers smart glasses equipped with a camera that connects to the Be My Eyes app. This remarkable AI tool allows volunteers from around the globe to see through his eyes via a smart device or laptop. As a talented Braille artist and children's author known as Mr. Dot, he completed the marathon in an inspiring time of just under 6 hours and 20 minutes. After crossing the finish line, a jubilant Clark exclaimed, "I'm absolutely over the moon. We did it." He shared that his mission was to push the limits of what technology can offer to individuals with visual impairment. In addition to his personal achievement, Clark raised over $3,500 for Fight for Sight, a nonprofit organization dedicated to funding vital research on vision loss in the United Kingdom. Clark has been living with retinosis pigmentosa, a condition that has left him with only 5% of his vision, which he describes as like looking underwater. A seasoned runner, he had previously completed the London Marathon with the help of a guide. This time, he was supported by a selection of virtual volunteers and Alistair Ratcliffe, a trained guide runner who was there to assist him whenever he needed it. The Be My Eyes app connects blind and low vision users with volunteers worldwide. Before the marathon, Clark ensured that his volunteers were well prepared and briefed so he could rely on familiar faces for support throughout his training and the event itself. They guided him every step of the way, demonstrating a beautiful sense of community. Clark expressed his gratitude, saying, "I love the idea that up to 300 people from all over the world, from Croydon to Kansas and Belfast to Bahrain, helped me to achieve it." He emphasized the incredible potential of this technology for people with sight loss, highlighting the new opportunities it creates and the growing number of users who benefit daily. Although the technology was not flawless, with occasional connectivity issues due to the event's size, Alistair Ratcliffe stepped in to provide guidance during those brief moments. As Clark crossed the finish line, volunteer Julie Sutton from Be My Eyes was there to present him with his medal, which he graciously dedicated to Ratcliffe. Clark extended his heartfelt thanks to Alistair and all the wonderful volunteers who supported him throughout the journey, stating, "They've really kept me going on this incredible journey. It's been one of the best experiences of my life." While Clark's achievement is a remarkable personal milestone, he hopes it will also have a broader impact. "By running a marathon and using the tech in a way that hasn't been done before, I have raised awareness and sparked so many conversations, which I hope will help to challenge society's ideas about what blind people can do." Eleanor Southwood, Fight for Sight's Director of Impact and External Affairs, expressed pride in Clark's extraordinary accomplishments, stating, "We are so grateful to him for his support and to everyone who has so generously sponsored him." Though the marathon has come to an end, Clark's fundraising efforts continue. Those inspired by his journey can still contribute by visiting the fundraising page. This article, Blind Man Wearing Smart Glasses Runs Marathon with Support from Hundreds of Virtual Helpers. Our next article is by Sarah Kuta. One of the America's West most iconic birds is attempting to mate near a dangerous airport. Could robo-birds help save them? Scientists are enlisting robots to help conserve one of the most beloved birds in the American West. At Grand Teton National Park in Wyoming, experts have deployed two dancing robotic birds meant to replicate the elaborate courtship displays of the male Greater Sage Grouse. They hope that boogieing decoys will attract amorous bachelors to a new, safer mating dance site known as a lek, located inside the park. If all goes as planned, the mechanical birds will lure the males away from their usual lek at the end of the runway at Jackson Hole Airport, the only commercial airport located within bounds of a national park. Males have been flocking to the wide, flat Airport Lek every spring since at least 1945. But with air traffic increasing, the site has become hazardous to the birds. Between 1990 and 2013, 32 greater sage grouse were killed by planes near the runway. Shifting bird activity away from the runway is an important outcome for both wildlife conservation and public safety. Officials have been encouraging males to relocate to a 100-acre reclaimed homestead known as the McBride Site. It's situated between the airport and the National Elk Refuge, where many of the birds spend their summer. And they hope that the birds will not only perform their courtship rituals there in the spring, but also build their nests and rear their young there during the summer. However, none of the challenges with restoration is that even when you create great habitat, wildlife doesn't always show up right away. Last year, officials tried using 400 handmade papier-mâché decoys to attract males to the site, but the project was a flop. Within 2 weeks of their installation, the replicas had been destroyed by rain, elk, or coyotes. This year, officials are trying a sturdier approach. To develop robotic birds, Grand Teton National Park teamed up with the Teton Raptor Center and the Jackson Hole High School Robo Bronx Robotics Team, among other partners. They installed the decoys at the McBride site in late March in anticipation of the birds' annual spring mating season, which can run through May. The high-tech birds sit on stakes, and they run on solar-powered car batteries. They're made from custom plastic shells, 3D-printed heads, foam from HelloFresh meal kits, fuzzy TJ Maxx blankets, and real feathers provided by the Wyoming Game and Fish Department. It's a kind of a Frankenberg, Gary Duquette, who coaches the high school robotics team, says. The robo birds are programmed to dance every morning from 5 to 9 a.m. to the tune of recorded bird calls, which are played from speakers camouflaged as rocks. The animatronic decoys perform choreography that's meant to mimic the eye-catching shows real males put on to impress the females. They kind of do a turn, 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 then they do their wing, 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 Duquette says. Only time will tell if the robot's stationary decoys and recorded bird calls successfully attract the birds to the McBride site this spring and beyond. Officials say it will probably take a few years to know whether they have permanently relocated. It's a long-term play, Brian Bedrosian, conservation director for the Teton Raptor Center, said. Greater sage grouse, which are roughly the size of chickens and the largest grouse species in the Americas, were once abundant on the sagebrush steppe of western United States and Canada. However, the species has suffered in recent decades, primarily due to human activity. The population appears to be shrinking because of the habitat loss, climate change, noise pollution, and other distributions, especially near the leks. In Jackson Hole, the population has largely declined in recent years from 180 males in 2015 to only 40 in 2019. However, the birds appeared to rebound in 23 when officials counted 90 males. The total in 2025 was 88 males per the Jackson Hole News and Guides, McIntosh, and this year's count is slated to begin very shortly. The number of grouse visiting the Jackson Hole Airport Lek has also decreased over time. Last spring, there were 3 males that showed up to strut their stuff near the runway, but officials aren't sure whether the birds are dying or simply relocating to other 7 leks in the region. This article by Sarah Kuta, one of the American's West most iconic birds, is attempting to mate near a dangerous airport. Could robo-birds help save them? Rebecca Brandis writes, eco-artist creates optical illusions by painting trash that she collects in national parks. Our human footprint on national parks is undeniable. a crushed can littering the ground in Denali, a lone flip-flop left behind in Zion. Trash sullies these sites of natural beauty, but eco-artist Mariah Redding has found a way to merge the two and promote mindfulness about our environmental impact. At public lands across the country, she collects pieces of debris and paints landscapes on them, then photographs the makeshift canvases against their references and creating the illusion that the garbage is part of the scenery. It's an approachable way to discuss pollution and climate change and kind of bring the soul into it. The ongoing series is a reflection of limited waste ethos she's adopted in her larger body of work. I started to see the amount of trash that I accumulated as an artist and being so inspired by landscapes and the environment. It didn't just really make sense or sit well with me that I was contributing to landfills with my art. She started with her own trash. She gathered broken paintbrushes and empty paint tubes, arranging them together in a sculpture, and painted it. Her work involving national parks began in 2016, the centennial of the National Park Service. Redding had gotten a job teaching art in California and planned a cross-country road trip from her native Maine to her new locale. Stopping at the parks along the way, she collected detritus that was representative of what she had found, buoys and fishing nets in Arcadia, for example, and labeled individual trash bags with names of the parks. The idea for the optical illusion element came to her during the summer of 2017. That's when she lived and volunteered at Guadalupe National Park in western Texas. A trucking route goes through the park, so random car parts often end up strewn about it, and inspiration struck when she came upon a cracked hubcap. The ridge of the crack was so similar to the mountain range skyline, I was like, oh my gosh, this is wild. So that was the first piece where I thought the item itself could kind of speak for the larger landscape around it. She's now visited nearly 40 national parks, not including state and community parks, and has completed artist-in-residence programs at Zion, Acadia, Glacier, and Denali. She's also worked as a park ranger. Redding enjoys painting the debris en plein air, referencing the scenery in real time. But when the weather or timing necessitates it, she'll take a photo of the setting and bring her found canvases at home. The latter method allows for more detail in her painting, though photographing the piece in the place where she originally picked it up can be trickier. Max is like the 7 hikes where I've had the trash and gone outside and the lighting isn't quite right or the clouds come in and it doesn't quite align. But I've also been kind of open to it if it doesn't fit perfectly. That's okay because that shows the cycles of the day and the year and kind of the movement of these landscapes around us. Redding said she hopes people who engage with her work walk away with a deeper understanding of our impact on the natural world, something she believes art is uniquely positioned to deliver, more so than esoteric studies or doom and gloom headlines. Art is such a powerful tool, it really shows passion, she said, adding, we are so bombarded with change and disruption, and it's just kind of chaotic right now. It's hard to latch onto the news or stay up to date with scientific findings. So, I feel like art has a lot of power in allowing people to grasp those concepts in tangible ways and maybe even more approachable ways. Her intention isn't to highlight the negative effect we can have, but rather the positive. Many hands make light work, and small changes in our everyday lives can make the world more beautiful, she said, sharing that one of her favorite books as a kid was Miss Rumphius by Barbara Cooney. The illustrated story is about a woman whose artist grandfather told her when she was a child that she must find a way to make the world more beautiful. So she ends up spreading lupine seeds around her home, and every year in June, there's a beautiful cascade of purple and pink and blue flowers. That's her way of making the world more beautiful, said Redding. I've taken it to heart. What is a small way that I can make the world more beautiful? And I hope that by seeing my work, other people can find their ways of making the world more beautiful, too. This article by Rebecca Brandis, Eco artist creates optical illusions by painting trash she collects in the national parks. Innovative trial for bowel cancer results in zero relapses for patients after 33 months. Exciting advancements in the treatment of bowel cancer are shining a new, hopeful light on patient outcomes thanks to the promising shift in therapeutic approach. Researchers have uncovered that a slight modification in the treatment protocol has led to significant improvement in survival rates nearly 3 years post-surgery. In a groundbreaking clinical trial called NeoPrism CRC, conducted by a dedicated team from the University College of London and UCL Hospital, patients with stage 2 and 3 bowel cancer received a brief course of the immunotherapy drug pembrolizumab before their surgery. This innovative approach contrasts with traditional methods of chemotherapy following surgery. The results have been tremendously encouraging, with 59% of participants showing no sign of the disease after treatment and surgery. Fast forward 33 months later, the news is even more uplifting. None of these patients have experienced a recurrence of their cancer. This includes not only those who were initially disease-free after treatment, but also individuals who had small remaining tumor traces which did not grow or spread during the follow-up. Dr. K. Keen Hsu, chief investigator of trials from the UCL Cancer Institute, expressed her enthusiasm, stating, "Seeing that no patient has experienced a cancer recurrence almost 3 years of follow-up is extremely encouraging. This finding reinforces the potential of the medication as a safe and effective treatment option for high-risk bowel cancer patients. Traditionally, about 25% of patients who undergo standard surgery followed by chemo might experience a relapse within 3 years. However, this study suggests that a short course of immunotherapy prior to surgery may offer a more durable solution for those facing high-risk bowel cancer. In addition to survival rates, researchers are diving deeper into the understanding the effectiveness of the treatment. They analyzed blood samples and created personalized tests to swiftly determine whether patients are responding to the treatment and if any cancer remains in the bloodstream. Dr. Hsu highlighted the excitement surrounding the development when she said, "What is particularly exciting is that we now may be able to predict who will respond to the treatment using personalized blood tests and immune profiling. The advancement paves the way for a tailored approach to cancer treatment, allowing clinicians to identify patients who may require less therapy and those who might benefit from additional support." Bowel cancer, the fourth most common cancer in the UK, affects around 44,000 people annually. In the United States, it ranks third among cancer diagnoses and is the second leading cause of cancer-related death for men and women. Early detection remains crucial, as the prognosis is significantly better for patients diagnosed at earlier stages. The NeoPrism CRC trial involved 32 patients with stage 2 and 3 bowel cancers, all possessing a specific genetic profile found in approximately 10 to 15% of bowel cancer patients across 5 UK hospitals. They were treated with the drug for up to 9 weeks before their surgery, marking the departure from the conventional approach, which typically involves surgery followed by chemotherapy. Yanrong Zhang, a clinical PhD student at UCL Cancer Institute and the first author of the recent findings, expressed the team's joy in closely monitoring patients with personalized blood tests. When tumor DNA disappeared from the blood, patients were much more likely to have no cancer remaining, and this matched the long-term results we are now seeing. Additionally, immune profiling of tumor tissues before treatment initiation could help predict responses, potentially guiding treatment decisions more effectively. As we celebrate this remarkable advance, stories from patients like 73-year-old Christopher Burston serve as a testament to the impact of the research. 3 years post-treatment, he has turned his regular activities and feels fortunate to be thriving. "The recovery went fine. I didn't have any problems. And since then, I've been feeling pretty much back to normal," he shared. These groundbreaking trial results not only inspire hope, but also highlight the ongoing commitment to improving cancer care. Let's share this uplifting news and continue to support the remarkable advancements in cancer research that bring hope to countless patients and their families. This article, Innovative Trial for Bowel Cancer, results in zero relapses for patients after 33 months. We're coming to the conclusion of Nice News for today, and I'd like to leave you with this quote from George Takei. Pioneering is never done in front of cheerleaders urging on a roaring grandstand of popular approval. George Takei. I hope you've enjoyed today's articles. Please join us again next time when we cover some very unusual topics on Nice News. This has been Joyce Vesper, your volunteer broadcaster for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be healthy, everyone. Stay well. Be happy. Bye-bye.